Chapter 14. We headed north to clear the columns, and were forced further east by the bend in the broad, sluggish silt hood, assuming Reggie was right. As the forest receded and disappeared behind us, the ground to the east grew hillier. Scouts scoured the countryside ahead of us, as those closest to the river looked for a place to ford it. It didn't seem to matter which side of the Godvale we were on. We were harried and cut down, and attrition was taking its toll. Vinduro was riding alongside me, and his mind was obviously occupied, as there was no idle chatter at all, which was sort of disconcerting, sort of like a bird without a beak. I sensed he wanted to be left to his thoughts, despite being only a few feet away, so I was reluctant to say anything. But as it turned out, I didn't have to sit in silence for more than a mile before he said,
"Queerest thing, ain't it?"
"What's that?" I replied. "There's a lot of queer things happening."
"Well, that's just it. Thanks to you and a bunch of crumbly parchment, we parted the plaguing Godvale. Or just Vale, if there's not gods hereabouts. Whatever we end up calling it. Point is, we let a small army through. Never been done before, right?"
"Not that I know of."
"So there's that," Vinduro said. "And on this side we see a dead city and the strangest greenery that ever grew anywhere. Only it ain't green, but purplish, and covered in even stranger spikes, with a bunch of skinny pricks climbing up and down like trained monkeys, plucking those spikes out like some kind of rare fruit. So, yeah, as if just being on this side weren't off-putting enough, there's the plaguing scenery. And then, just in case those two things didn't make a man mighty uneasy all by their lonesome, well," he started speaking faster, "a couple of deserters mosey on up and lay into us, shredding us like we were only so many straw dummies in a training yard. Only we managed to kill a couple, so they ain't gods, we don't think, don't rightly know. Maybe they're priests to the gods, maybe monsters or demons like Mole says. But who plaguing knows? All we got for certain is they ain't men, and likely something a lot more than men. So we're a long way from home, in a place we got no place being in, confronting things way beyond our understanding, and dying way too plaguing fast."
Vinduro shivered, and cast a quick look behind to make sure the other soldiers hadn't overheard.
"I know I shouldn't be talking like this. Ain't very... lieutenant-y."
It hit me then that getting promoted when you hadn't been expecting it, might not have even wanted it, would have been challenging enough even under ideal conditions. And these were not ideal conditions. I said,
"It's a natural reaction, Ven. These are incredibly unnatural circumstances, and I guarantee every man in this company is wrestling with the same thoughts you are."
"Maybe. Maybe not. But officers ain't supposed to let on they wrestle with the same things as the rank and file."
Then more quietly, sounding young again, he added,
"Hughspear never did. Model officer right there, if there ever was one."
I looked behind briefly as well, before saying, "Well, be that as it may, he'd be thinking the same thing as you just now. And you didn't reveal it to anybody but me. And you know I'm not talking to the rank and file. Most of them want to punch me in the face." Vinduro laughed, chuckled really.
"You're giving yourself too much credit, more like all of them."
I did laugh, but it was stopped short when I heard a gut-wrenching scream from somewhere behind us. A shriek, truly. Something that didn't sound like a response to pain, but fueled by the most irresistible terrors imaginable. The last time I'd heard a scream like that, Sofjian was driving a man mad as we fought the Hornmen in Aelspell. My first thought was that we were under attack by deserters again, or something worse, if possible. But there was no enemy to be seen. Braelar, Muldus, Asmorgon, and Sofjian raced down the line, and Vinduro and I followed close behind. It didn't take long to discover the source of the scream. Several Sildoon had gathered around something, and Braelar ordered them out of the way as he dismounted. A soldier was lying in the stones and scrub, one foot still in the stirrup. Braelar shouted,
"What happened? Who is this?"
Banks said,
The name's Guntro, Cap. His, not mine.
I know who you are, you ass. I say again, what happened?
Nothing, Banks said, sounding surly and stupid. That is, nothing I could see. He wasn't acting peculiar-like at all. Just quiet. But we all been quiet. Then, all of a sudden, starts hollering like his bones was on fire, or his skin were melting something fierce. Then clutched his head like he'd been hit with an invisible bolt.
Braylar glanced at Softchin, as Bank continued.
That was it. Fell out of the saddle. Is he dead? Not looking real alive, is he?
Vinduro had dismounted and was kneeling next to Guntro, checking for any signs of life. He looked at the captain and shook his head. Braylar asked,
Does he bear any serious wounds? Signs of infection?
Vinduro felt Guntro's head, his palms, looked his limbs over. He pointed to the bandage on the dead man's forearm.
Cool as can be. No stink of rot anywhere. Only wound I see is this one.
He looked up at Bank.
What happened to his arm here?
Bank replied,
How should I plaguing know, Sergeant? I ain't his nursemaid.
Vinduro stood and said,
That's Lieutenant, you dumb plaguing bastard. And you've been riding along with him.
He said it with conviction and some bile, and Bank backed down.
Pardon, Lieutenant, but can't rightly say.
Vinduro said,
Well, get down off your horse and inspect him then, you whore son. Get the rest of his armor off.
Bank dismounted, looking none too happy, but Maldus had a big, crooked grin on his face. As Bank started removing the dead man's armor, Braylar called out,
The wound on his forearm. Does anyone know anything?
Another soldier rode up, weaving between the other Sildoon, and said,
Aye, Cap. One of them deserted giants clipped him a little. Only a glancing blow, though. Wasn't deep at all. Someone else distracted the deserter before he could finish Guntro off. He got off lucky. Well, until now, that is. Not so lucky now, I guess.
Muldus ordered that soldier to get down and give Bank a hand undressing Guntro.
Anyone else know anything? Did Guntro say or do anything out of the ordinary before screaming and falling down dead?
The soldiers looked at each other, and no one volunteered any information. When Bank and the other soldier were finished, Guntro was dirty and dead, but without any other wounds to speak of. Everyone looked at the corpse. Softchin approached and said, May I? Muldu stepped in between, scowling and slurring.
You may get your ass back up on that horse, or you may walk in any other direction. You may do any old plaguing thing you may think up, so long as you stay clear of us and ours.
Braylar walked over and put his hand on the pale lieutenant's shoulder.
I don't think she can do any more damage here, do you?
Muldus still had a black look, but slowly took a step back. A small step, but a step. Softchin nodded to her brother and approached the corpse. Bank and the other soldier got up and moved back as if they'd just seen a brass viper slither out of a hole. She squatted alongside, closed her eyes, placed one hand on Guntro's arm, and moved her other hand over his chest, his head, without touching him. Some soldiers leaned forward in their saddles, others shifted nervously, and no one looked comfortable, especially Muldus. Softchin opened her eyes. It is hard to tell with the dead, but there is residue here to be certain.
As Morgan rumbled, What are you plaguing talking about, residue?
She said, Memory magic. I strongly suspect that's what killed him just now. Bank said,
Ain't no Memmerdons hereabouts, excepting you. Are you saying you killed him?
Yes, you simp. I struck him down for saying something stupid. You might be next, I wonder.
Vinduro said,
So, the deserter then?
Softchin stood up. Or his weapon. She pointed at the small wound on his forearm.
I can't say for certain.
Vinduro asked,
But why didn't it take him out when he got wounded?
Softchin looked at Braylar as she responded. I imagine it was memory poison of some kind. She turned back to Vindoro. I do not pretend to know definitively. I know as little as you do of deserters, in fact. But do recall, memory magic did not originate with men, but with the gods, or their proxy. She walked back to her horse, as Muldoon said.
Plaguing legends. Told you, those things we killed weren't gods. And we got no idea what came from where. Nothing but legend. Which is the same as real old horseshit.
Sofjin climbed into the saddle and swept her arm around, east to west. You aren't the most observant type, so perhaps you fail to notice. But we currently find ourselves in the land of legends, at least their chosen sanctuary. But believe what you believe. I tell you, no blade or infection brought that man down. That much I am certain of. It was memory magic. Unlike anything I've seen before, but memory magic. Ascribe what you will to that, Sildoon. She rode back up the column. Braylar watched her go until as Morgan said,
Guessing you'll want this one on a horse, too?
The captain turned back to his monumentally surly officer.
I will want this man dressed. I will want this man back on his horse. And I will want you to see to it. Yes?
He didn't wait for a response, but got into his own saddle and called out to his soldiers.
Death is death. Our enemies caused it. That is all that matters. Perhaps someday we will return when we're at strength and visit untold vengeance upon the massive bastards here. But for now, we continue north until we can cross the veil again and leave this cursed place behind. That is all that need concern you. Understood?
When Vindoro and I were mounted and riding to the front of the company again, I looked over at him and said, That was quite lieutenant-y, how you handled yourself back there. I'm sure Hughspear would be proud. Vindoro glanced over at me, and then away quickly. You think? I think. He allowed himself a small, somewhat sad smile, but it was brief, and gone almost as soon as it arrived. Trying not to dwell over much on more cursed weapons, monstrously huge eyeless overlords, or the increasing number of enemies we made no matter where we went or which side of the God Veil we were on, I threw myself into translation at every opportunity. With Braylar always hounding me for updates, there was a heightened sense of urgency. But now, without the wagons and with our numbers dwindling by the day, the exigency had doubled. Every moment I pored over another lay subsidy roll or some account of a depleted larder, I wanted to scream. It was everything I could do not to skim and rush in the hopes of finding something of substance relating to centuries, early Memmerdons, even the God Veil. And I knew the more I rushed, the more opportunity to miss something. Still, there weren't that many tomes and pages left to sift through, and I despaired of ever finding anything remotely relevant or useful. But then I opened a new ledger and immediately recognized the precise, clipped, and straightforward script. It was in the hand of Vortness, the Temple of Truth priest who'd studied Anroviak or Antwick's writing on the subject of controlling memory witches. Unlike Lusky, who pressed his witches to approach the God Veil and didn't specify how he maintained a hold on them, Vortness's other account I'd seen had provided some tantalizing, if incomplete, details about the construction of the first frames. I was expecting more of the same here, oblique references lacking explicit description, and got it for a fair number of pages. But then a new entry began describing the frames in greater detail as a means of building on the experiments the earlier priests had performed in controlling memory witches. Slowing down for accuracy was nearly impossible, but I knew when I presented my findings to the captain, there would be a reckoning if I couldn't answer all or most questions confidently and in full, especially if Muldoon, or worse, as Morgan, was in attendance. Hugh Spear's absence was still sharp in many ways, but he always proved level-headed and deliberate when assessing new information, and I was afraid how it would be received, even if I was thorough and exhaustive in my interpretation of the words written so many centuries ago. I hadn't gotten nearly as far as I would have liked when the captain ordered us to get on the move again, and translating in the saddle was impossible. Still, I couldn't help scanning the pages as we rode, even if I couldn't piece everything together or write down anything I found. I nearly bumped into the horse in front of me more than once. Braylar noticed and fell back until he was alongside me.
You do seem more distracted than usual, Arky, and that's saying something. What have you found?
I glanced over at Venduro, behind me slightly, and kept my voice low. I don't have enough to say for certain, Captain, but it is provocative, and I'm hopeful. He wasn't wearing his helm, so I could see his eyes, which somehow managed to both narrow and register some excitement at the same time, which was quite a trick.
Oh? I do presume you have enough in hand to warrant such a declaration, yes?
I do, I think I do, I said. I'll need more time to be certain. But, yes, this is the most fascinating and germane writing I've come across yet. I can't promise it will explain how Sinead managed to siphon control of all the Memrodons in one fell swoop. But I also can't promise it won't. It was difficult to moderate my tone and enthusiasm.
Very good, he replied. Light a lamp when we make camp this evening, and don't bother helping with the horses and gear.
Truly?
Truly. Our need outweighs any caution at this point. And besides, I don't think the deserters will see it, do you?
He twitch-smiled and resumed his place at the head of the line. Venduro nudged his horse a little closer.
You really think you got something good, Arky? Something we can use to take that pompous prick down?
There was no disguising his enthusiasm, which was one of the reasons I was growing to like him so much. I might. I just might. Venduro nodded three times in quick succession.
Well then, best wipe that goofy smile off your plaguing face and get back to it, he said,
with a goofy smile on his face. And so I did. When we finished writing for the day, I earned some foul stares from some of the other Saldoon as I continued scribbling by the lamp. But Venduro kept watch as I continued poring over Vortness's record, and sent anyone away who asked what I was doing. Even when Morgan came by, towering over Venduro, and said,
Hey, little shithead, douse that wick.
Venduro replied,
He's doing what he needs to be doing, Ogre.
I was talking to the other little shithead, Squirrel. You his champion now.
Venduro stood up to him.
Operating with Cap's say-so. You got an issue with it? You take it up with Cap. Go on. Wake him up. I'm sure he'll be really plaguing happy to have a chat and explain his motives and whatnots. Loves to have his sleep broken like that, he does.
The ogre stalked off. Much later, I saw Sofchian pause as she walked by, watching me for so long that I grew incredibly uneasy before she finally moved off into the dark. I continued on long into the black evening, my quill scribbling furiously, pains in my back growing, hand aching, a dull pounding behind my tired eyes, watching the watch change in the middle of the night, and still pressed on. When I finished translating the journal, I revisited key passages again and again to be sure I'd gotten it right, or at least not absolutely wrong. Satisfied, I finally doused the lamp and fell into a fitful slumber for a few hours, exhausted, but still jittery with the discovery, rolling it over in my mind, stunned that the answer might truly be in these pages, and frustrated that I hadn't happened upon them much earlier. After waking, splashing some water on myself, and forcing myself to eat something, I changed into a slightly less sweaty and sticky tunic, made myself as presentable as you could after sleeping on the cold ground, gathered my writing case and notes, and found the captain. He saw me coming and summoned his officers and Sofchian. When we were all assembled, Braylar said to me,
Well, Arky, I do hope you have roused us for good reason. Muldus is in a foul mood when he hasn't broken his fast yet, and, judging by his expression, he is long on hunger and short on patience.
Venduro looked at Muldus as he took a bite out of a boiled egg and offered another. Muldus said,
Plague your egg, that ain't no way to break a fast. Give me a plaguing chicken or two, at least a plump quail. Anything but something that dropped out of the hindquarters of a bird.
Venduro replied, yolk in his teeth. I ain't positive, but don't think chickens shit the eggs out, Moldus.
You don't put that egg in your mouth or back in the pouch, and I swear I'll stick it up your ass, and you'll be the one shitting it out.
Braylar folded his arms behind his back.
You see? Foul temper. Either way, you should begin now before things get worse.
This better be good, Muldoon said.
I was nervous, especially with Muldoon snarling, as Morgan staring holes through my skull, Sofjian looking on critically, and Braylar with a shorter temper than ever of late. Only Rudgie and Venduro looked encouraging, and his cheeks were stuffed with egg, so he actually did look like a squirrel. My news was as fulsome as anything I'd discovered, and I wanted to launch into it directly, but also wanted to be sure they had context. As you might recall, Vortnis was a priest of truth hundreds of years ago, who was fascinated by the memory witches, and like some of his predecessors, sought to control them rather than destroy them. And he was far more methodical than some of the earlier priests in the order who had done the same, or at least luckier in not getting found out. He, as Morgan said,
got no interest in a plaguing history lesson, thinking I'll get the troops ready to move out, lest you got a problem with that, Cap.
Braylar gave the much larger man a measured stare before replying,
This history lesson, as you call it, might be the key to regaining control of the Myrmidons and bringing Thumar back to the throne. But if you would rather resaddle a horse, by all means.
As Morgan shrugged his massive shoulders, looking more bear than man.
They ain't going to resaddle themselves.
And then he walked off, scratching his ass as he went. Sofjian said,
I obviously missed out on your earlier discoveries as well, Arki, but you can bring me up to speed another time. Please do continue.
I said, Vortnis suspected that the memory witches and the guardians, the sentries who had weapons like Bloodsounder, that they were all tied to the Godveil somehow. The witches were able to approach much closer than anyone else, and returned unburdened, their powers in check for a bit. And the guardians...
For not rehashing, Braylar said, you are doing an inordinate amount of rehashing. Proceed, quickly.
I pressed on. Well, it's all relevant, because Vortnis figured out that if he could somehow harness the energies of the Godveil, draw some of it away, that he could bind the witches to him without needing the incessant pilgrimages to the Vale. And after a great deal of experimentation, mostly failures, and some lives lost in the process, he finally hit on the solution. A frame. Sofjian asked,
So this priest of truth was the forerunner then?
One of them. But it doesn't really matter if he hit upon the idea first. What does matter is that he not only perfected it, but served as a model. From his account, it sounds as if another priest found out about his experiments and, rather than reporting him to the legates, stole the secret, as he too framed a small portion of the Godveil and used it to bind witches to him.
Muldoon said,
And Vortnis couldn't very well go squawking to the high priests about it, as they'd both get their bellies ripped open and their guts strewn across the temple courtyard.
I nodded. That's right, but Vortnis was cagey and vengeful. He schemed and continued his experiments, though with far fewer witnesses who might be able to betray him. And while it took him several years, he finally uncovered a way to steal the portion of the Godveil his brother had procured in his own binding. Braylar Twitch smiled.
At long last, you come to the marrow of the matter. What did he do, Arki?
I tapped my brass writing case twice. It is actually quite brilliant, or at least exceedingly clever.
You are exceedingly annoying. What did he do?
I said, He had several memory witches in his service, and...
Service? Sofjian laughed. Such a lovely and dishonest euphemism.
Control, then, I amended. Try slavery. Braylar said,
It is hard enough getting a straight answer out of him without you needling him, sister. Be still.
I tried again. Vortnis released one of the witches from his frame and bound her to an underpriest with a new frame, and... Maldus interrupted, earning a black look from the captain.
He did what now? Why would he plaguing do that? Thought he was a jealous horse cunt.
An experiment, I replied. He wanted to see if he could steal the energy back to his own frame, reclaim control. Braelar turned his slitted, mossy eyes on me.
I am unsure how many different ways I can ask how this was done.
Then he surveyed the rest of his retinue.
And if anyone else utters a single word, I will let Asmorgon saddle you.
No one else spoke, so I said. It seems it required... I glanced at Sofjin quickly. Sacrifice. He killed two of his witches in doing so, but he managed to siphon off the bit of Godveil in the underpriest's frame, drew it back to his own, and the control defaulted to him once more.
And this sacrifice, did he reveal specifics on how this was accomplished, precisely?
I nodded. He did. Apparently he ordered both of the witches to focus day and night, meditating without food or respite, until they succeeded in drawing the swath of Godveil back to his own larger one.
Sofjian said,
and in doing so, snuffed out their lives.
Yes, though that's a soft euphemism for murder.
She smiled as Venduro said.
So, we can ask questions now?
Braelar sighed, but didn't deal out any more threats, so Venduro said.
So, Sinead must have a whopping big frame hidden somewhere. Biggest ever, right? Must have, to have all the mems bound to him like that.
Sofjin said. He does, in a tower in the Citadel. He must have sacrificed... apologies. Murdered a fair number of his Imperial Myrmidons to accomplish it.
These were hedge witches Vortnis used, I replied, not fully trained Myrmidons.
Yes, Sofjian said levelly, hinting at something dangerous under the surface. But that was to reclaim something from one small frame controlling one witch. Sinead usurped control over 50 tower frames in Sunrak alone, and who knows how many in other provinces, each frame controlling hundreds of Myrmidons. So it's safe to assume that the cost was still quite high, training or not. Myrmidons were sacrificed. I could only nod. Venduro rubbed the tuft of hair on his chin like it was a small mouse he hoped to win over, and said,
"So, we just got to find and destroy the frame, right?"
Braelar replied, "No, young lieutenant. That's exactly what has prohibited the Myrmidons from simply doing the same and freeing themselves for centuries. Destroy the frame and there would be a horrible surge unleashed that would slay every Myrmidon bound to it. Isn't that right, sweet sister?"
Sofjian gave him a hard look and cold smile.
"If only severing our chains were so simple, brother, you can be sure we would have shattered our frames centuries ago."
She looked at Venduro. 300 years ago, give or take, there was an uprising in the Badger Tower. Myrmidons turned on their commander, took him prisoner, and destroyed the frame, despite his warning them several times that they were dooming them all. They ignored him, opting to risk it, hoping that such stories were only a myth designed to keep them cowed. As it turned out, they really ought to have been more open-minded. The moment they shattered the frame, they all fell dead.
"Commander too?" Venduro asked.
"Commander too. So you see, destroying the frame is out of the question. And you can be sure, even if a hateful wretch like Muldus here got it in his head to try, it is exceptionally well protected to prevent just such a thing." Muldus rubbed the pale stubble on his face with some knuckles.
"Much as I'd like to take all witches out, Thumar will be wanting you for his own. And we got orders to make that happen. Which means reversing what that quivering twat of an emperor had done."
He looked at Braelar.
"Big problem there, though. How in the plaguing hells are we supposed to do that without having Myrmidons of our own? Kind of brings us full circle back to this fuck-all place we're stuck in, don't it?"
Braelar gave his sister a long, pointed look, until she noticed and shook her head vehemently. In case you have forgotten, I am not beholden to the jackals anymore. I am not your Myrmidon to command, brother. And even if I were, while I appreciate your boundless confidence in my abilities, I couldn't possibly undo what a circle of my sisters managed to accomplish. Not on my own. And I have no wish to die trying. Rudgie looked at Sofjin.
You and your sisters are leopards by default now, right? But through no choice of your own. There must be others like you who got no wish to be his tools, especially if you spread the word the bastard's got no problem offing you to further his plaguing agenda.
Sofjin replied, Perhaps there will be some Myrmidon still loyal in their hearts to their former towers. Slavery has a peculiar way of distorting fidelity like that. But that presents its own problems. Even if I somehow got word to some who might be inclined to side with Thumar as the least loathsome option, the chances of the plot being discovered and squashed are very high indeed. Vindero asked,
Can't you just...
He wiggled his fingers quickly by his ear. Sofjin laughed.
Ah, you are delightful, Ven. But no, unlikely. That's one area of memory magic in which I have very limited skills. I would need to practically be in the trench to manage even the humblest of efforts. Beyond which, you can be sure the Imperial Sisters will be poised to intercept any such unsanctioned communication. I'm no less a deserter than you, just now. Even if I somehow reached another Myrmidon inside Sunrak, the chances of me being reported would be quite high. But even if not, I would need to meet sisters face to face to truly orchestrate any kind of counter-coup. That simply is not my talent.
Muldus looked at Sofjin.
Fat plaguing lot of good you are, witch, he said.
She turned on him. I am the only witch you have, Sildoon, and apparently I need to remind you, not an especially forgiving one. Mind your tongue. Muldus started to reply when Braelar cut him off.
We are allies and will comport ourselves as such. Both of you.
I tried to break some of the tension and bring us back to point by saying, What about hedge witches? Instead, I only drew Muldus's squinty-eyed ire.
What about them, Scribbler?
Well, the priests of truth managed to siphon the energy using them before, so maybe it could be done again. Until we do get control of the Myrmidons, we'll need to find another way to ensure the captain doesn't succumb to any more stolen memories anyway. Who's to say we couldn't locate a handful more?
Me. I'm the one saying it. Finding Loy was a fluke. You see how plaguing hard it was to find a replacement? And you're talking about finding a handful?
He waved his good arm at me.
Piss on this, Arky, but we ain't in any better position than we were an hour ago. Except I'm hungrier, and we still got no idea how to get control back.
Braelar said, Both paths are likely fraught with failure or death. But we will need to choose one if another doesn't present itself. He looked at me.
You have done good work here, Arky. Let us think of this some more, yes? And see if we can concoct a third option.
Chapter 15 The company broke camp and started winding north again, according to the curves of the river. But I didn't have long to bask in the small heaping of praise the captain had dealt out. We'd only put a few miles behind us, when I saw Braelar slow his horse, one hand slowly dropping to Bloodsounder, his head tilted to one side. I recognized that position too well now, and while I knew he wasn't about to stand in the stirrups and start swinging the flail in circles above his head and announce his affliction to the entire troop, I was sure he must have been getting some warning of impending violence. After nudging my horse ahead to catch up, I sidled alongside. Captain? Muldus and Vinduro recognized the signs as well, and also approached, with the pale boar saying,
What do we got, Cap?
Braelar held the haft of Bloodsounder with his right hand, slowly pulling the weapon free from the hook on his belt. It will be soon. Before midday, I am thinking. He had that faraway sound to his voice that only came when he was sifting through his own memories that hadn't quite been made, or those the flail had stolen from a dead man. Vindoro asked,
Deserters? Something worse? It can't be something worse, can it? A flock of rippers would probably be better, wouldn't it? I mean...
Muldus glared the younger man into quiet, and then Braelar responded. It is... hard to say. There are deserters coming for us. But men, too. I said.
Not Sildoon, though?
No, he replied slowly, and then released the flail. Something else. It was difficult to make out.
Muldus asked, Should we keep on north, Cap? Can't say I like the idea of heading further east, but we could double back south, try to get around whatever's plaguing ahead.
Braelar shook his head, partly as rebuttal, partly simply to clear Bloodsounder's ripples out. There are two groups, I believe. Not huge numbers. Then again, even a small party of deserters could prove problematic, yes? We will wait on reports and decide from there. Until then, we continue north, though moving further east so we aren't trapped against the river. I hoped this warning would prove false, as they were sometimes wont to do. But an hour later, a rider came galloping towards us from the rear. Since there didn't appear to be horses on this side of the Godvale, I assumed it was a jackal. But galloping scouts never brought fair news. The soldier stopped at the head of the company and saluted. He was breathing fast and hard through a narrow nose, though it was difficult to tell if it was from strenuous riding or nerves. His report confirmed the latter.
Deserters, Cap. Moving up on us fast. Small party. About 5 miles or so.
Define small, soldier.
The scout steadied himself, took another deep breath.
More than 10, less than 20, Cap. They might not have no eyes, but still see plenty good, so I didn't want to hang around. They had a couple of outriders. Well, walkers, as they weren't riding nothing. Gave them a wide berth, crept up and saw the party. Brought word straight away.
Vindoro said.
Even 10 could still mete out a wicked bunch of damage. 2 of them put a big hurt on us back there in the columns.
True, Braelar replied. But that was with no room to ride, and less to shoot. This terrain is hilly, to be sure, but we could pick a spot that was to our advantage, if it comes to it.
Muldus spit into the stones.
Aye, but they can take a lot of damage, too. Might have to plug them 12 times each before they close.
Braelar said.
And with nearly 100 Sildoon remaining, that shouldn't prove impossible.
Muldus asked.
We're going to just keep heading north, see if they can keep up then.
Braelar nodded.
That seems prudent. No sense engaging them if we can avoid it. Even greatly outnumbering them, we have nothing to gain by meeting them in a pitched battle.
The scout took a drink, rinsed the dust out of his mouth, and spit some water in the dirt.
Something else, Cap?
He didn't look eager to deliver this last bit of news, but obviously had no choice.
Yes, soldier?
The scout shook his head slowly.
Queerest thing I ever did see, or near about. The deserters, well, they got some sort of baskets or barrels on their backs.
Baskets or barrels? And why is this so peculiar?
Not the baskets so much, but what's in them.
Braelar scowled.
Dog heads? Gourds? Hot pies? What is it, man?
That's just it, Cap. Men. They got men in the barrels.
Braelar blinked twice. Men. In the barrels.
Ah, yup, Cap. Though unless they got them folded up real good, these men got no legs. No room. Barrels are only big enough for the torsos. The upper half, Cap.
I know what a plaguing torso is, you idiot. Is that all?
The scout nodded and said,
The barrels had quivers full of javelins on the side, and some of the deserters, they got what looked like staff slings, in addition to their spiky clubs and whatnot.
I asked, "What's a staff sling?" Muldus looked at me, one eyelid unhinged.
"Gods, but for all that learning, you sure are a dumb shit sometimes. It's a plaguing staff with a plaguing sling on the end."
Braylar ignored us. "Anything else?"
The scout replied. "Nope, Cap. That covers it. Want me to head back?"
"No, you are relieved. Ride with us and take a respite. Send Doswick in your stead. Tell him to monitor their approach and give word immediately if they encounter anything else."
After the scout rode down the line, Muldus asked,
"So what do you reckon, Cap?"
"I don't know if they can overtake us, or if there are more parties ahead, but I am relatively sure we will encounter them. That much felt certain. The best thing might be to simply pick ground of our choosing to engage."
But before Muldus could reply, Vinduro called out that another scout was riding hard in our direction from the north. Braylar swore as we watched the rider approach, his hand on Bloodsounder again. Sofjian watched him carefully and said, "That vicious thing truly is a prescient piece of work, isn't it, Bray?" The captain kept his eyes on the scout.
"Would it were otherwise, but yes, it would appear so."
The scout arrived and reported another party of deserters closing in on us, slightly larger, at least 25 in number, similarly outfitted with barrels and slings. After Braylar dismissed the scout, Vindero said,
"What do you reckon they got legless men on their backs for, anyway?"
Muldus replied,
"Why don't you canter on up and ask real nice? Maybe they'll lop off your legs and let you take a ride."
Braylar looked at his officers. "We head east, further from the Silt Hood. Advise the outrider to find the most level open ground that will favor our maneuverability, presuming that is still an advantage."
The officers conveyed the order down the line as we turned away from the river and the Godvale beyond it. We continued east, but several hours later, another scout reported that the deserters to the south had changed course as well and were closing the gap. They were only 2 miles behind now. The captain increased our pace after letting the horses rest only briefly in the middle of the afternoon. But as dusk closed in, it was clear we weren't losing them, and they continued only to slowly make up ground. Braylar found the area he was looking for, generally flat, with no trees or columns or anything else to interfere with bolts or offer our enemies protection. Whether or not maneuverability was an advantage, speed no longer seemed to be. The deserters continued gaining until Braylar ordered us to hold and spread out, preparing to face our pursuers. Not long after, we saw the enemy on the horizon. The deserters stood out as huge, stark silhouettes. I heard Vinduro say,
"Plague me."
The deserters began marching forward. They were still several hundred yards out, beyond crossbow range, but not by much. Braylar spun his horse around and addressed his officers.
"We fight them here. Take them out from a distance if possible, and then head back south, as the north seems blocked."
As Morgan slid his helm over his huge, hairy head.
"About time. Been spoiling for a fight."
Vinduro put his pot helm on and said,
"You don't say. Never would have imagined."
It was hard to tell with the massive beard, but I think the ogre smiled.
"Try not to get crushed, squirrel."
I pulled the crossbow off the saddle, started spanning it. When I glanced up, the deserters were spreading out into a single line, and Braylar called out orders.
"I'll lead the crossbows from the center, staggered. Muldus, you take half of the remainder on the left wing. As Morgan, you do the same on the right. Once we start loosing, they will likely come hard, realizing they can't sit at distance, and they will probably make for the crossbows to eliminate that threat.
We will take out as many as we can, fall back with rolling gears, and draw them in, though not too deep. With any luck, we will rout them and drive them off. But if they survive the bolts, the wings will collapse, flank them, and
crush them, as Morgan finished. Got it, Cap.
Braelar likely took issue with the tone and interruption, but didn't bother dressing him down.
Sofjian, ride with one of the wings. If they close, see if you have any better luck with your memory craft. Venduro, stay with me. Ready the troops, get them in position. Relay the directive about gears.
Everyone started moving off, issuing orders, splitting up the company. As expected, they responded immediately with practiced precision. Even though we were across the field from a sizable battalion of demons, monsters, or at the very least, giants. For the 100th time in the last few days, I wished Hughspear were here to help put me at ease, even with the likelihood of death looming. I looked to Braelar.
Where do you want me, Captain?
It was all I could do to ask without my voice cracking. Braelar glanced at me as he fitted a bolt in his crossbow.
While you have improved as a shot, marginally, you can barely ride in a straight line, and you certainly can't maneuver and loose a crossbow at the same time. You would only get yourself killed. Head off with Muldus. He won't be your nursemaid, but with any luck, it won't come to that. If you see a deserter, shoot it.
He slapped the devil's claw on the stock. And if things go sour, I don't know that surrender is an option. They might not honor such things. But you could end up climbing columns like a monkey. Better than death, yes? I shaded my eyes and looked at the deserters, barely able to make out the small human heads behind their horned ones. I could also end up having my legs cut off and being stuffed in a barrel. Braelar twitch-smiled.
Who can say? You could always turn the crossbow on yourself. I'll leave that decision to you.
Then he rode over to the crossbow cavalry lining up behind us. Venduro had them in position already. Three lines, the horsemen staggered, so they would all have a clear shot ahead at the deserters who were slowly approaching. I rode over towards the Sildoon on the left wing. Muldus was the only other one with a crossbow loaded and ready. The rest had their shields and weapons out, except for a few who favored pole arms. Muldus saw me and trotted over, eyeing the crossbow in my hand.
You going to accidentally shoot one of my boys here, Scribbler?
I shook my head fast. No, Lieutenant.
That's good, because you can be sure I'd break your skull with your crossbow if you did. You got it?
With most of his face hidden behind mail, and one eye drooping, that wasn't a visage to be trifled with. I nodded, mouth dry, and he continued,
Stay on the far edge so you don't trip up any real soldiers. Loose if you got a shot, but if they make it to the center or veer off and take us on, get the L's out of the way and wait for us to save your sorry ass again. Don't even think about drawing that grass doll cutlery, as you'll just end up slitting yourself open somewhere. You got that?
I tried to take breaths. Don't shoot any Sildoon, and don't gut myself with Loy's sword. Got it.
Good. Now get your ass in position.
I rode to the far edge, keeping my horse always a few feet from the soldiers. I'd seen some temperamental horses kick or bite if crowded by other horses, and while the Sildoon were masterful horsemen, I expected that the beasts mirrored the character of their riders. The Sildoon waited as the deserters slowly marched forward, nearly in range now. I imagined Braelar would hold until he was sure every bolt would strike home somewhere and do some damage. Several deserters had staff slings at the ready, and the name was just as self-evident as Muldus made it out to be. A staff nearly as long as they were tall, with a sling at the end. I wasn't sure what the range would be for one used by a man, but these were obviously much longer, and would have the benefit of their strength and 4 more feet of elevation. Still, there looked to be fewer than 15 slings to 4 times as many crossbows on our side. Even with ranges being equal, we would certainly win that battle. The only question was how many bolts it would take to bring down an armored deserter. But then I thought about projectiles. I'd never seen a regular sling used, but I'd heard they used stones or lead shot. From the size of the pouches at the end of the cords on the deserter's version, their staff slings were like miniature trebuchets. I tried not to think on the possibility of a huge stone punching a hole in my chest as the behemoths continued closing. Drumming my fingers on the side of the stock, I kept looking back and forth between the deserters and Braelar in his sildoon in the center, waiting to see the bolts filling the sky and arcing down on the enemy. They all had their crossbows up and ready, sighting down the lengths, preparing to loose, and so I did the same. The deserters kept coming at the same deliberate, maddening pace. I heard Braelar call out,
"Steady! Nearly there, lads!"
However, before we shot any bolts, the deserters stopped, crouched slightly, the staff slings up in the air and cocked over their shoulders, held in two hands. And suddenly those long staves were all whipping forward, with one cord slipping free as the pouch loosed the projectiles hurtling high into the air. Unlike an arrow or bolt, these didn't appear to be the most accurate weapons, and with the size of the ammunition, easy enough to sidestep, especially since there weren't that many. Five or so seemed to be heading to our wing, five to the middle, and five to the far wing, dark spots in the bright blue sky arcing towards us. None of them were directed towards me, and I watched the Sildoon in the wing nudge their horses away from the stones, some lifting their shields to be sure they weren't struck. But as one projectile hit the ground 10 feet to my right, I realized they weren't stones at all. The projectiles were ceramic and shattered on impact, releasing a cloud so thick and black it was nearly tarry. Sildoon started coughing as the smoke rose everywhere, mixing together, forming a dense, dark fog. My horse whinnied and started to shy away, and I wasn't about to stop her. But it was too late. Even as we shifted sideways, more ceramic projectiles struck the ground, and then there was no escaping the smoke. I sputtered as I felt it rise up around me, stinking like burning hair, and I gagged, my horse jerking her head around, stamping the earth, shifting sideways. I tried to turn to get to fresh air. We moved off to our left, away from the wing of Sildoon, when I heard more objects whistling through the air. They sounded different than the pots or canisters, though, and as I watched through teary eyes, I understood why. Several large stones crashed into the ground amid the horses' hooves, nearly setting them into a panic, and one struck a Sildoon in the head. His helm was crushed as he flew from the saddle as if a giant hand had pulled him from behind, and he was surely dead before he even hit the ground, blood pouring down his face from his ruined skull under the stove helm. The smoke was dissipating, but still stung my eyes and nose, even as I was away from the worst of it. Several Sildoon were bent over against their horses' necks as they led them towards me. I heard crossbows loose, though not in unison, as their ranks had likely broken and their visibility had to be worse than mine. Another volley of large stones rained down, and while most missed, another Sildoon was struck in the shoulder, and even from 15 feet away I heard bones under the armor crack, followed by a single scream. But that sound was immediately rendered unimportant by another terrifying noise, pounding, getting louder by the second. More crossbows loosed, and I looked through the gray haze, trying to find a target myself. But between my eyes still watering and what remained of the smoke, it was nearly impossible. I aimed in the direction of the deserters anyway, squeezed the long trigger, and hoped for the best as another volley of stones struck, one bouncing 5 feet from me, half the size of my head. There were more screams far off to the right as some unfortunate Sildoon must have been hit. And then I saw a deserter emerge from the ashy smoke, charging the nearest soldier, the staff sling held high. The Sildoon saw him, tried to control his panicked horse,
and raised his shield to block the staff as it swung down. The planks shattered, and the arm probably did as well, as the soldier spun his horse and swung his axe. It sliced into the giant's arm and drew some blood, but not enough to do more than anger it. The deserter whipped the staff around, the long cord trailing behind, and it slammed into the soldier's side, knocking him from the saddle. I grabbed a bolt, forgot I hadn't spanned the crossbow yet, and dropped the quarrel into the stones as I fumbled with the devil's claw. Looking up, I saw two more Sildoon ride forward, slashing at the deserter as they passed. The giant's thick hide armor deflected one blow, and the other drew more blood, but the deserter had the staff moving again and caught the passing Sildoon in the back. I finished spanning, grabbed another bolt, and took aim at the deserter. Another Sildoon rode out of the thinning smoke between me and the deserter, and I stopped short of shooting just in time. The deserter swung the staff, and the thick haft cracked against the shield. But the Sildoon was smart and didn't try to block the blow directly, only deflected offline a little. He led his horse forward, swung his sword as he passed, and the tip caught the deserter below the jaw. The giant stepped back, brought one hand up to try to stanch the blood, and swung at the Sildoon, but he was already clear. Blood flowed around the deserter's thick fingers, and the giant wobbled a little, turning and swinging the staff in a semicircle with one hand to ward off other attacks. I sighted down the stalk, held my breath, and squeezed. The bolt was a blur and struck the deserter in the side of the face. It opened its mouth to roar, but no sound came out, as more blood pumped between its fingers. The giant fell forward, and a Sildoon rode past on either side and slashed it again before it toppled. I was spanning the crossbow again, terrified, but thrilled I actually hit the giant where I hoped to, when another appeared, two of the three spikes on its club bloodied, a human in a barrel on its back. A Sildoon was racing for the pair, shield up, mace tucked behind it. The deserter turned to face the Sildoon, and the soldier wisely veered off. But while he narrowly avoided the swipe from the club, the legless man in the barrel reared back and let a javelin fly. The tip struck the Sildoon on the edge of the shoulder outside the lamellar cuirass. As the deserter spun to face another horseman galloping past, the human on its back spun as well, and I saw that there were actually two cylinders, a smaller one just inside the outside barrel, so he spun the one inside all the way around until he was facing directly behind the deserter, right at me. He drew another javelin from a quiver on the outside of the cylinder, and I dug my heels into my horse to present a moving target. I ducked low as I tried to work the devil's claw and felt the javelin sail past right over my head. Rising up, I dropped the bolt in place, tracked the pair as they moved off, aimed for the man in the barrel, and loosed. The bolt struck the cylinder just below the rim. Considering my restless horse and the moving deserter, that was frankly amazing. But just then, I really wanted to put a hole in the legless man who so narrowly missed driving a javelin through me. As I started to reload the crossbow again, I glanced up and saw the man in the barrel grabbing the deserter's shoulder and then yelling something at him. The deserter turned around, saw I was the closest opponent, and started forward, huge legs pumping. I knew I couldn't reload fast enough to loose a bolt before the deserter caught me, and even if I could have, there was no chance of me hitting him in the throat or anywhere else that might have slowed him down, so I was just about to give my horse my heels and try to ride clear when three more Sildoon attacked him, one racing by on either side, striking at his exposed legs as they passed, and the third attacking him from the rear. The deserter was badly wounded, or hobbled anyway, and struggled to spin to face his foe. The Sildoon turned with him, and while I couldn't see every strike, he must have been slashing the barrel more than the sightless giant itself. As the deserter took another halting step, the straps on its back gave way, The barrel overturned, and the legless man fell out,